to hold here at B'nai Torah. I'm also grateful to Andrea and Isaac. Sorry, there you go. I'm grateful to Andrea and Isaac for providing the refreshments for this morning. It is true that Ham and Tashin are associated with the day, but they're not one of the four mitzvot of the day. And the way we've structured our program is actually to talk about the four mitzvot of the day. So later, maybe we can have a conversation about Ham and Tashin, or what was originally Muntashin, of course, and their association with Purim. But for this morning, what we've planned is a series of four 30-minute shiurim. And so the idea really is to sort of keep each one to a precise time frame. We will take questions as we can in the course of the discussion, but we want to honor everybody's time on a busy Sunday morning in the week of Purim. Okay. So, if you have the sheet that says Mishloach Manot, the Anthropology of Jewish Food Sharing. Oh, and I will note, we have sign-in sheets. I don't know where they are at this point, but there is at least one over there. But having people sign in is helpful. It also gives you an opportunity to sign up for our weekly email in the event that you wish to do so. So I brought you source number one from Israel's Misrad HaBriyut, the Ministry of Health. Minhag Purim Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'ehu, a friendly reminder from your local Jewish government, saying that there is a custom on Purim of sending portions, each one to his fellow. Larov, generally speaking, Anu Nodnim U'Mekablim Mishlochei Mamtakim Chatifim V'Ugot. What do you get? You get candy. You get cake. You get cookies. That's what people tend to receive. Hapam Anu Matziim L'Nhog Tzat Acheret. So they say, we actually would like to float a different idea. And you can see it in my translation there for those who prefer that. But Baruch HaMitzvah, as far as the mitzvah itself, Chashuv Shiyu L'Pachot Shtei Manot Mazon Shonot. It's important to have at least two different portions of food, right? That's the mitzvah. Shalach Manos is supposed to be that you send two different food items to at least one person. That's how you fulfill the mitzvah. However, Baruch HaTizuna Hayam Tichonit, in the spirit of the Mediterranean diet, mumlatz al, it is recommended that you do the following. And number one, and in the interest of my 30-minute time frame, I'll read from my translation. Number one, try to vary the types of food. Don't only send sweets and candies. In fact, you don't need sweets and candies at all. Horror of horrors, it is true. You can fulfill shalach manos without an ounce of sugar. Number two, they suggest portions with high nutritional value without excessive fat, sugar, or salt. Ideally, homemade, unprocessed foods, whole grains, vegetables, fruits, beans. And then finally, they say, you don't have to focus exclusively on food. You could blend into the Mishloach Manot an original component, maybe a pot with seasonal flowers, a pot with herbs that is attractive, and you could also use it as food. Very interesting. Can you really fulfill Shalach Manos without candy? Yes. Yes, indeed. Maybe. Can you fulfill Shalach Manos with food that functions as musar? Right? If food is not only something you can eat, but it is also ethical instruction, it's telling you that this is the way you should be eating. Does that fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos? When food carries a message like that? Why not? That's what we'll have to talk about. Is there a benefit in including flowers with Mishloach Manot?
It's nice, but you wouldn't fulfill the mitzvah.
Nice, but you wouldn't fulfill the mitzvah? Other views? Gerald is Paskin, but other perspectives? Okay, so this is what I want to talk about. And answering these questions requires a blend of halakha and anthropology. So in order to get to this, we have to start with a halakha which you may be familiar with, and a debate that is read into this halakha, although I'm going to question it a little bit. The Rama, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, writing in 16th century Poland, in source number 2, posed the following question. What if you send shalach manos, and the recipient rejects them? You send shalach manos, and the person says, you don't need to give me shalach manos. I'm really okay. Right? Or the person says, I don't want the candy. Or, you send shalach manos, and they're not home. right? They get home, like, right before Purim is over. In such a case, do you fulfill your mitzvah with these rejected or forgiven mishloach manot? The case where they're not home at all until after Purim is actually its own discussion. That's not for right now. But take a look at source number two, where the Rama, Rabbi Isserles, writes, Im shalach manot l're'ehu. If somebody sends portions to somebody else, sends the shalach manot to somebody else, v'hu eino rotzeh l'kablam, and the recipient does not want to accept them, omoch elo, or he forgives it, he said, it's okay, I don't need. The Rama says, yatzah. You fulfilled your mitzvah. You did your job by sending shalach manos, and it's okay that the recipient said, no thank you. Clear? Okay. So the Chasam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, analyzed this halacha. And he said it actually depends on why we send shalach manos. Obviously we send shalach manos because Megillas Esther says that they enacted mishloach manot ish l're'ehu, that people should send portions to each other. But what is the benefit of mishloach manot? What's the rationale for mishloach manot? Why do we send them? What would you say? Why do we send shalach manos? Acts of friendship. I mean, it's good for us to be friends all the time. Why on Purim specifically? To commemorate the event. How does that commemorate the event? What does Achdus have to do with the event? What does Achdus have to do with Purim? Yes.
So, Amon, when he called out the Pharaoh, chose to talk about the Jews, and Purim said that they don't get along with one another, never mind with us, they don't get along with themselves. So we're saying, talking about us, to show the world that we can get along.
Good. So Howard says the issue of mishloach manot, that the goal of mishloach manot is effectively to counter and to delegitimize what Haman said about the Jews. Haman says we are mefuzar meforad, we are scattered, and we're actually a united people at least one day a year. If you take a look at source number four. This is an idea that's presented by Rav Shlomo Halevi HaKabetz in his Manos Halevi commentary to Megillas Esther. Rav Shlomo Halevi HaKabetz is best known for writing what? Lecha Dodi. That's right. If you have a Birnbaum sitter, I think the Orange Scroll also notes him as the author of Lecha Dodi. He's also the brother-in-law of Rav Moshe Cordovero. So that means, then you know already, he's 16th century Sfat. And look what he says in source number 4, commenting on Perek Tet, chapter 9 of Megillas Esther. He says, they make the 14th day of Adar a day of joy, feasting Yom Tov Mishloach Manot. Why? As they acted as one person to gather each with the other, the opposite of the false speech of the foe and enemy who said one nation is scattered. They gathered, they unitedly, hikahel, they united together in prayer, and they united together as a nation. We want to be unified, and therefore, on Purim, we send each other gifts of food. That's one idea. It's not the only idea. Jump back in your source to source number 3, Rabbi Yisrael Isserlein, writing in 15th century Austria, the Trumas HaDeshen, says, that's not what shalach manos is about. He was asked a question. People had a practice of sending each other, as you see in my translation in source number 3, the people sent clothing, people sent linens to each other in honor of Purim. And the question is, do you fulfill shalach manos with a gift like that? And his answer is, nope. He says it doesn't work. Why? Because the goal of Mishloach Manot, as far as he is concerned, is to provide for the Seudat Purim, to provide items for the Purim meal. It may be true that by the end of the meal, you may need a blanket and a pillow. However, that's a different topic for one of the later shiurim. But the issue here is, you need to provide fixings for a meal. The blanket doesn't count. It has to be food. So the Chasam Sofer of Moshe Sofer looks at these two different perspectives on shalach manos. One, I'm sending shalach manos in order to unify everybody. Or two, I'm sending shalach manos in order to provide what people need for the meal. And he says, well, then you're going to get two different perspectives on whether you fulfill shalach manos if the recipient rejects them. On the one hand, if the recipient says, thanks but no thanks, You created unity. They know you wanted to give them a gift, even if they said, I don't need it. But they still have that heartwarming feeling of somebody wanted to give me something. On the other hand, if it's providing for their meal, you didn't provide for their meal. Therefore, you didn't fulfill Shalach Manos. So the Chasam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, says, it appears that the Rama, Rabbi Isserles, is following the viewer of Shlomo Halevi Al-Kabetz. That the goal is unity, and that's why this works. That's what the Chasam Sofer seems to say. And that's something you'll hear that shir every Purim somewhere. People like this idea. It's a very interesting idea. The problem is it doesn't really work. One reason it doesn't really work is the Trumas Hadesh in Rabbi Yisrael Isserlein in source number 3 was a principal architect of Ashkenazi halacha. Rabbi Moshe Isserles often quotes the Trumas Hadeshin and follows him. Rabbi Shlomo Halevi Al-Kabetz, while a brilliant Rav, very good poet, was writing in a commentary to Megillas Esther. He wasn't writing a work of law. And it wasn't, he's not somebody, you know, a 16th century Sephardi Rav in Israel is not likely to be the one who Rabbi Moshe Isserles follows in Paskening Halacha. It doesn't really fit. That's number one. Number two, when you look at his words, Rabbi Alkabetz, his words in source number 4, he's telling a story. He's simply saying, this is what the Jews did. They wanted to show they're unified. They're not like what Haman said, and therefore they send gifts. He wasn't making a halachic statement that this is what Mishloach Manot are like. Number 3, when you look in our works of law, they clearly follow the view of the Trumas Hadeshin. For example, the Rambam in source number 5, I'm not going to read it out in the interest of time, but the Rambam writes in source number 5, here is the obligation for your meal. This is what you do for your meal. And then he says, one is in the same halacha, you're obligated to send gifts of food to each other. It's very clear the Rambam believes that the gifts of food, Mishloach Manot, are really about providing the means for the seuda, for the meal. So here, all the evidence stacks up to say that Mishloach Manot is really about providing for somebody's meal. The idea of unity is a nice idea, but it's not the core halacha here. So what's going on? So Rav Asher Weiss, in his Minchas Asher, which I brought you in source number 6, Hebrew is at the bottom of one side, my English translation is the top of the second side, he says, everybody agrees with the view of the Trumas Hadeshin, with Rabbi Isserlein. He says, it appears logical to say, they didn't disagree regarding the halachic parameters of the mitzvah, everyone agrees, giving the portions, giving Mishloach Manot, I haven't actually done the formal translation, Mishloach, sending, Manot, portions, everyone agrees that giving the portions is for the needs of the meal, as per Trumat HaDesh and per Rabbi Isserlein. It appears that the Manot HaLevi, Rabbi Al-Kabetz, did not write his words other than as an added reason, homiletically, as Musar. The idea is we should all learn that, we should be unified. He wasn't making a halachic statement. And therefore it appears clear, Rabbi Moshe Isserles meant, one fulfills his duty, even if the gift is rejected, not because he has fulfilled the reason for the mitzvah, but even though he hasn't fulfilled the reason for the mitzvah, he has fulfilled the mitzvah because you're not obligated to do more than send. In other words, the way to understand why you fulfill Shalach Manos, even if the person turns it down, is relatively simple. I worked hard. I put together a basket. It has a nice gift of food. It's even the Mediterranean diet food that the Misrad HaBriyut recommended. It's got nuts. It's got olive oil. It has some whole wheat rolls. And I brought it to the person's house, and they said, no, thank you. What am I supposed to do? I did everything I could do. That's why I fulfilled Mishloach Manot, because my job is not to accept it on his behalf. My job is simply to send it. Check. I did it. Did we create unity? Maybe. Did I provide for his meal? No. But what else was I supposed to do? I sent. The person didn't accept. Yotze. That's what the Rama is saying. The upshot of this, and the reason why I'm dragging you through this discussion, is that that what we're saying here is this. There are two tiers to the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot. The first level is, your goal is to provide something that the recipient will use at their meal. That's what we're trying to accomplish. Which tells us, what's the answer regarding the flowers? they're nice. You can have them on the table at the meal, but that's not really what Mishloach Manot is supposed to be. Mishloach Manot is supposed to be food, and ideally, food that someone will actually use at their Purim Seuda. That's really what we're supposed to go for. That's number one. But number two, Rabbi Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz's point is well taken, which is, he's telling us that there is a message of unity in it, and I think that's really important in framing how we fulfill Mishloach Manot. I don't think we should discount or discard what he's saying, even if it's not the reason for the mitzvah. And in order to grasp this, we need to take a closer look at the mitzvahs of Purim and at the anthropology of food sharing. Why human beings share food with each other. So first of all, in terms of the mitzvot of Purim, we have four mitzvot, as we're going to be discussing today. Hopefully you all have four pieces of paper. If not, by the end of the morning, you should. But we have Mishloach Manot, we have reading the Megillah, we have having the Purim Seuda, and Matanot Le'Avyonim, gifts to the poor. Are these mitzvot of Purim, Ben Adam LaMakom, between us and God, or Ben Adam LaChavero, between human beings and each other? Two of them are clearly Ben Adam LaMakom, between human beings and God. Right? Which ones are the ones that are between human beings and God? Sorry? Megillah, right? You're thanking Hashem for what he did, and the Seuda, right? The Seuda. You're having a feast in order to celebrate what Hashem did. These are mitzvot between us and Hashem.
You can argue about the Seuda.
Why?
Because
if I sit down on Purim and I have a sandwich, right, and I thank Hashem at the Seuda, I fulfill the mitzvah. It's beautiful to do it with other people. Right? The Rambam talks about this. Others talk about it. Welcoming others in. It's a beautiful thing and everybody should do it. But at the core, you fulfill the Seuda solo. So there's no, you know, and that may be a benefit when you get others there. But the mitzvah at its core, you and God. Thank Hashem for what happened on Purim. On the other hand, one mitzvah is clearly ben adam chavero, between one person and another, and that is, of course, matanos levyonim, right? Giving needy people money. That's matanos levyonim, that's clearly ben adam chavero. But then you get to shalach manos. Is shalach manos ben adam lamakom or ben adam chavero? Is it between human being and God or between human beings? Well, it depends. If I take the view of the Trumas Hadeshen that it's about having my meal at which we can thank God, give other people the means of being able to celebrate what Hashem did, then it is ben adam lamakom. It's between man and God. Even though I'm walking to your door and handing you a basket of food, what I'm actually doing is a mitzvah between myself and God. It has all the trappings of a social mitzvah, but it's actually a religious act to God. You can't guarantee anything in life. Yes, but that's all I have to do. That was the point that we saw in the Ramah. Yes, no, that's true. Rav Mark, I'm going to stop you there because I have a half an hour limit. You're right. I can't guarantee anything. But my goal is to make sure he has a seuda, which means it's really about God. That's the Trumas Hadeshen's Ashkenazi framing of what you're doing on Purim. It's about making sure this person is going to have the means to thank God, and then it's up to them to do it. But Rav Alkabetz is telling us there's another dimension. It is also Ben Adam Lachavero. It's also about how you relate to others, and it's this unity element. And here, I want to talk about why people share food. If we had an hour for this year, we would do this with a discussion, but we don't, so we won't. Some reasons why people share food are purely selfish. There's something that sociologists describe called costly signaling. Costly signaling means you engage in a behavior which costs you something because you benefit by sending off a signal when you engage in that behavior. I brought you in source number 7, the Merriam turtle hunters. This is talking about hunters who provide food for the rest of their clan. So they're engaged in costly signaling. It costs them something to hunt for the food and then give it away. But they benefit by sending a message, we are providers. As you see in number 7, signalers, the hunters, gain social and reproductive benefits. Specifically, we find that successful hunters gain social recognition, have an earlier onset of reproduction, achieve higher age-specific reproductive success, gain higher quality mates, who also achieve above average reproductive success. In other words, they do better within the community because they sent off a message, we are providers. That's an example of food sharing, which is selfish, right? It's fundamentally self-oriented. You could think of it, of course, not only in terms of the Merriam turtle hunters, but let's say people who give charitably, right, but specifically choose to do it in a way that the world will take note and see what they've done. So they're sharing their resources, but there's a benefit involved in doing so. There are other philosophies of giving that are self-interested. There's a fascinating one in number 8, which is meant to, that one gives in order to forestall having other people ask in a way that is going to be uncomfortable. Give to somebody preemptively in order to prevent them from asking you at a time that you don't want them to ask, or in a way that you don't want them to ask. You might look at that as the social welfare system within a state or within a country, saying we're going to provide in order to avoid having to provide in other ways. So this is the way that we're going to choose to help. There are other self-oriented ways to give. There's a fascinating article in number 9 about vampire bats. Did you know that vampire bats share food? You don't think of that. Like, vampires, we usually think of being selfish. The vampire bats actually share food with the neediest vampires. The vampire bats. If you take a look at number 9, the vampire bats will starve after 60 bloodless hours, making them unable to maintain a critical body temperature. They need to eat 50 to 100% of their body weight in blood every night. Blood is preferentially donated to bats in critical need. Those that would reach minimum weight within 24 hours within a given roost. They will actually share food with each other. What's the idea? So sociologists look at it and say it's what's called risk reduction reciprocity. What it means is, if we create a system which everybody shares with everybody else, then when I need, someone will provide for me. Right, the Gemara Moikatan, which I referenced in the heading to number 9, talks about the idea of attending a shiva or a funeral for somebody else, hoping that then when it's one's own turn, the other people will attend theirs. These are self-oriented sharing activities. Other times, people share for an ideological purpose. We share food in order to create a community of like-minded people. People who believe in the same things. Take a look at source number 10, please. Researcher Robin Fox quoting Mayor Fortas. Because of its centrality in our lives, food becomes a perfect vehicle for ritual. Food rituals become central to most religions. Food taboos mark off one sect or denomination from another. Modern anthropology tends to stress the usefulness of food as a marker of social boundaries. As the late Mayor Fortas said, it is not so much that food is, quote, good to eat, as that it is good to forbid. Meaning, you delineate who your community is by those who eat the same way, who don't eat the same things, those who eat perhaps at a joint meal. There's an element of using food to identify your like-minded community. Think of the idea of a mezuman, right? That at the end of a meal, everybody invokes Hashem and thanks Hashem together. You're identifying an ideological community. Korban Pesach will be another example of that. And then you have other times when people share food for the sake of building community. Community with each other. Whether that's filling the needs that a community has, which I brought you in number 11, you can take a look at that later. Or whether it's in terms of social bonds by the experience of eating together. You create unity among people when they share food at the same meal. If you take a look at source number 12, this one is important. This is out of South Africa. Nearly 15 years after independence, the specter of apartheid is still painfully apparent in South Africa, yet an exciting new inclusivity is visible in the cultural sphere, particularly in the kitchens of some talented chefs, where the various traditions comprising South Africa's multi-layered cuisine come together. Rainbow cuisine has proved to be more than just a catchy phrase. studies. It has actually impelled change, at least in the culinary arts. The larger question is whether this metaphor can have a wider impact and help shape social behavior. So what they're trying to do is get people to eat together, to share cuisine, and thereby to create community. So that there are lots of reasons to share food with each other. Some of those reasons, the ones we started the list with, are selfish. I want to feed myself, really, and I'm going to give food to others in order to gain that. Others are ideological. I want to share ideals, create a community around those ideals, and share food as part of a ritual that will help create this community of shared ideals. And sometimes, it's for the sake of building community, filling the needs of the community, having people build bonds with each other. So the debate between the Trumas Hadeshin and the Manos Halevi, Rabbi Al-Kabetz, is really about why we're sharing food on Purim. The Trumas Hadeshin says, share food with each other to make sure that everybody is able to have a Purim Seuda, a Purim meal. You're sharing food to build ideological community. Whereas, Rabbi Al-Kabetz is saying, Spein Adam L'Chaveiro, you're doing it in order to build social bonds. Even if you're not going to eat with them at the same meal, the fact that you gave them something and they're going to enjoy it at their table, they're going to eat together, is itself going to build a sense of community. There was, when I lived in Pennsylvania, there was a family that used to send Shalach Manos, they would make a deli sandwich, like a really nice deli sandwich. They packed with all sorts of good stuff. And I would always have that as part of my Seuda, and I would always mention them at the Purim Seuda. It's a way to create community. So the Manos Halevi's point is that it is also a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. It's a social mitzvah as well. We usually take the Manos Halevi's view as obvious today, meaning it was the first idea mentioned here when I talked about why send Shalach Manos. The first idea mentioned was, it's in order to build bonds. If you ask your average person in shul, why do I give gifts of food? It's to build community. But that's actually a big chiddush. That's a big novelty that the Manos Halevi, the Rabbi Al-Kabetz, is presenting, but he won. Because if you ask people today, they don't talk about it as providing for someone's seuda, they talk about it as creating friendships. Bottom line for us, looking back at the Misrad HaBriyut, at Israel's health ministry, and their instructions for Shalach Manos, it is, as the Trumas Hadeshin says, fundamentally providing for other people's meals. So that means the two kinds of food that will help us share our appreciation for God. It means don't send flowers. You can send flowers in addition, but don't make that your core Shalach Manos. And I think that's what they meant in the health ministry. But the reason for it, the lesson of it, is also this business of building bonds. And so we should pick food which will help people feel close with each other. Which to me means it should be nice, but also the food shouldn't be mussar. It shouldn't be rebuked. Don't use Shalach Manos as an opportunity to instruct people on what they should and should not eat. They try to give people something that you think that they're going to enjoy, that broadcasts a message of caring and affection, and ultimately out of this we will indeed defeat the message of Jews being mefuzar, mefurad, being scattered, and instead we will be a single, unified nation which will have Ora v'simcha v'sasan v'ikar. Thank you very much.